Hey, it's John Engle, and I'm excited to share that registration is now live for Grid Tech Connect Forum California. Join us in Newport Beach, June 24th through the 26th for the Interconnection event. We're bringing together utilities, developers, regulators, and advocates to take on one of the biggest challenges facing the energy transition, both at the DG and utility scale levels. Click the link in the episode description and use promo code PODCAST to save 10% on admission. Join our partners from the Department of Energy, NREL, Southern California Edison, PG&E, CAISO, Sunrun, NG, Convergent, AES, and so many more for this impactful event. We'll see you there. Hello and welcome to another episode of This Week in Clean Tech, a roundup of the week's biggest stories you need to know in climate and clean energy in 15 minutes or less. Today is Friday, January 26th, 2024. I'm Renewable Energy World Editor-in-Chief John Engle. We'll have Quil Robinson, author of an op-ed in Time Magazine on China's solar dominance, joining us very shortly. But for now, I'm joined once again by clean tech PR veteran and my best friend, Mike Casey of TigerCom. Hey, Mike.
All right, John Engle, what undisclosed location are you coming at us from this week?
I am in New Orleans at PowerGen International, one of our events. So I'm in the bowels of the convention center, trying so hard to find an internet connection and some space where I can do this. So man of the people, like you always like to say, Mike, I made it happen and I'm here to deliver the good and bad news sometimes. Where are you?
I'm in the TigerCom studios, as I always am. But listen, John Davos Engle, I prefer to think you're in the VIP suite as opposed to the bowels of the convention center. Just saying.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You're always gassing me up, though we don't like to bring up fossil fuel sources on this podcast. We want to thank each of you, our listeners, for sending in those story recommendations each week and your nominations for Clean Techer of the Week. So do that. Shout out your colleagues, people that you see in the industry that are doing great things, and send them to rew@clarionevents.com, and we'll have that link in the episode description as well. All right, Mike, let's get it.
All right, first story up, Scott Waldman from E&E News titled, Biden Needs Young Voters, Can His Climate Policy Rally Them? John, what do you think?
Yeah, so during the 2020 election cycle, 57% of voters 29 and under said they definitely plan to vote in the presidential election. That number is now down to 49%. And these young voters were key to Biden's win in 2020. So young voters age 29 and below are especially concerned about climate change. So one might expect more support given the historic nature of the IRA and these investments in clean energy technology and electric vehicles. Mike, what did you take away?
You know, I'm a happily retired former Politico, but from my perspective, you got 58% of Americans say they know even a little about the IRA, and younger voters have been exposed to a lot of TikTok content about Alaska's Willow Project and the Mountain Valley Pipeline in West Virginia. I mean, those are decisions that were made by Biden under, I think, the duress of necessary horse trading that goes on with governing. But the bottom line is they're not really sold on Biden yet, and they're not as familiar with the Biden administration's very real and very significant accomplishments in creating new clean energy jobs and injecting billions of dollars into this economy, creating jobs that some of these young people will end up being able to take. I think what remains to be seen is if and when they really learn about these actions, will they find them compelling? Something tells me that we're going to find out later this year. John, story number two.
All right. Number two comes from a reporter that is on the Mount Rushmore of This Week in Clean Tech reporters, Nicola Groom from Reuters, titled U.S. Unveils Solar Energy Plan for Western Public Lands. Mike, this seems important.
Yeah, I think it is. And we're going to have to ask Nicola which of the Mount Rushmore figures she wants to be akin to. All right. So the Biden administration proposed a new solar energy plan last week, 22 million acres in 11 Western states as to what they're calling preferred zones for solar development. You're talking about 5.4 million acres of land in Idaho, Montana, Oregon, Washington, and Wyoming to an existing Obama-era plan that prioritizes space within 10 miles of existing or planned transmission lines. It also includes 126 million acres in more sensitive places to protect wildlife habitats, recreation, and historic places. John, your thoughts?
Yeah, federal forecasts show that 700,000 acres of public lands are needed for solar energy over the next 20 years if we want to reach our clean energy goals. It'd be a huge step forward that
We achieved that goal of streamlining permitting, especially on those public lands. And if BLM is taking these steps and we can move the needle a little bit, even on hydro projects, pumped hydro projects, these big, massive clean energy pieces of infrastructure that we know we need, that would be a huge help. But I know that that is still a permitting slog. So good start. More can certainly be done. Mike, what's our third story?
Amanda Chu at Financial Times, titled How Biden's Climate Law Spurred a Tax Credit Revolution. John, what'd you think?
Yeah, so if you're in this industry, the word transferability is probably being used by you or your colleagues more and more often. But it's an overlooked element of the IRA. And what this gets back to is clean energy deployment, monetizing clean energy projects depends on tax equity markets. And there are four or so banks that control all of that market. And it's insufficient for what the demand is from developers. It's really hard to get, especially for smaller projects. So transferability allows these developers to monetize their tax credits by not just selling them to a bank, but by moving them to an entity who has that tax liability and may not be as familiar with clean energy development or tax equity structures. Mike, what'd you take away?
I think, you know, small developers really can struggle with to benefit from these tax credits and secure the tax equity partnerships because there's hefty upfront costs. I think so there's still a possibility that there might not be enough corporate participants to meet the expected supply of credits. And with the market being so new, it's really hard for suppliers to be confident that they're getting the best deals for the credits. So I think this is kind of a Wild West stage right now in this part of the energy transition. And I think it's going to be fascinating to watch it unfold. John, what's your fourth story?
Yeah, fourth story comes again from Reuters from Forrest Krellen, titled Growth in Low Emissions Power Expected to Cover Demand According to the IEA. Mike, what'd you think?
Man, I got to tell you, I love the IEA. They really speak truth to the world when it comes to where the energy transition is going. So according to them, power generation from renewables will be enough to meet the growth in global demand for the next 3 years. And about half the world's power by 2026 is expected to be generated by low emission sources. Now, that's wind, solar, and nuclear, but that's up from 40% in 2023. It's also projected that renewables will overtake coal globally by 2025. I got to tell you, that's a big deal. So it's renewables will be reaching 1/3 of total global electricity generation. I got to say, when I got into this sector 20 years ago, I didn't know when this day would come. So it's very exciting signs of momentum from a really authoritative source. John, what'd you think?
Consider me a little surprised that you love the IEA so much, because they do get some criticism from time to time and have historically for being a little kind to oil and gas interests. But that is not the conversation for now. So maybe we're in a new time. Energy demand is also on the rise, for your point. My projected increase by 3.5% over the next 2 years. About 85% of that increase in demand will come from China, India, and Southeast Asia. And on the other hand, global pollution is on its way to a 2.4% decline in 2024, with larger declines in coming years. It's exciting because it shows that we are decoupling. We can increase energy use while simultaneously reducing pollution. We just need to figure out how to speed up that reduction as much as possible. All right, Mike, we're ready for our fifth story and our guest this week.
Yeah, so our last story is written by Quill Robinson from Time Magazine. It's called The True Cost of Chinese Solar Panels. And kind of a note to our listeners and watchers, this is the first time we've had someone who's not a reporter, but's written really thoughtful opinion and analysis piece on the show. And he's speaking directly to a topic, I think, that has dominated a lot of the news coverage we've had on in the history of the show. So I'm really fired up at having Quill on and talking with him about his analysis. So Quill, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, John. Good to be here.
All right. So this is not a short piece. And if for those who haven't read it yet, what would you say is the biggest finding that they ought to consider in this analysis that you've done?
Sure. Well, as both of you gentlemen know, last year was a tough year in terms of renewable energy deployment. There were lots of ups and downs, with interest rates, with the lack of permitting reform here in the United States. There was lots of good and bad going on, but solar was really a bright spot. It was the majority of deployed, installed renewables around the world. Really, the point of the piece that I wanted to make was that there's sort of a caveat when it comes, an asterisk, when it comes to solar deployment around the world. Around 10 years ago, China contributed 40% of the world's solar panels. And today that number is over 80%. So they really have a near monopoly on the global solar market. And prices have gone down because of that. They've, you know, leveraged economies of scale. Last year, we saw the price of solar modules drop by around 40% of Chinese solar modules. Now, that's certainly a good thing when it comes to climate change. But the thing that I wanted to communicate to all of us in the community who care a lot about climate change was that there's some downsides to Chinese solar dominance. First of all, there is its association with human rights abuses. A lot of the world's solar panels are connected to the Xinjiang region in China. And are directly connected with the Uyghur slave labor, which is not something that we want to support. There's also national security issues associated with China's solar dominance. You know, just to put this in perspective, you know, OPEC exports around 40% of the world's oil, and we're concerned about OPEC's oil dominance. 80%, China controls 80% of global solar exports. So we don't want to trade dependence for dependence in the over the course of the energy transition. And so those are a couple of things that I'd point out, and I'm happy to dig into this a little bit more, but I don't want to discourage the discourage the enthusiasm around solar, but I think that we have to appreciate that Chinese solar dominance comes with a cost.
And I don't want Mike to discourage people from reading this saying it's too long. It's like 1500 words, Mike. What is too long to you? I think it was a very normal sized article. I thought it was perfect length.
John, let me explain the younger generation to you, if I could, because I'm authority on that. They think and want short form content. I don't know if you know that, John, but I'm just going to break it to you. All right, big guy.
And this is the older generation thinking they know what young people want. So what an interesting paradox there. Well, you may not know, but the flagship podcast, Factor This, which houses This Week in Cleantech, was started because of the Oxen Solar tariff petition. And my belief that the rhetoric surrounding that issue was not capturing all of these different elements and why it's not just the decision to shut down our border and be protectionists and only support U.S. solar manufacturing. But there were so many other bets and decisions that we made along the way in the last 2 years to relinquish control of a technology that we pioneered. And in reading your piece, I'm noting the point on UFLPA and the abuses against the Uyghurs, which I think is very well documented to this point, and our need to build up a domestic manufacturing base. I don't think you said anything that will surprise people, but it doesn't seem to be intertwined in enough conversations in this kind of the popular arena of our industry. Do you feel that way? Do you feel that's why you were compelled to write the piece in the first place?
Right. Well, I think there's going to be a temptation as we see, as you know, there's been this holiday on the solar tariffs for the last 2 years, and that's going to expire this spring. And I think there's going to be a temptation to perhaps open up a little bit more and perhaps overlook some of the negative associations of Chinese solar as the urgency for deployment increases and the Biden administration really wants to deliver on the promises. Because I mean, as you know, like a very important part of leveraging these tax credits and accelerating decarbonization is having access to the solar panels that are required to deploy to do that. And I think that there's going to be a real temptation to take advantage of the cost advantage provided by cheap Chinese solar. So I don't think that I'm saying anything particularly new here, but I want to make sure that there is a reminder for those in the community that as we are looking to save the planet, reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and protect humanity from the effects of climate change, we don't want to accept or even enable human rights abuses in China or, again, trade energy dependence on Russia and OPEC nations for dependence on China, which is certainly not a friend or ally of the United States or the Western world either.
You know, Quill, we did a project for the Ultra Low Carbon Solar Alliance several years ago, and Michael Parr there calculated how many pounds of coal in Western China has to be burned to produce a 40-pound solar panel. And so we could maybe quiz the listeners, viewers, on how many pounds that is, but I'll just give it out. It's 540 pounds. So 540 pounds of coal burned for every 40-pound solar panel made there. And I think that the dotted line projection is if you don't diversify where solar panels are made away from coal intensive areas, solar's growth perversely actually throws a lifeline to coal when we're trying to get the amount of coal burned down and keep it in the ground. So I think yours is a very interesting perspective. And I want to thank you for writing it and coming on the show. John, we're just about out of time. So I want to make sure we get to our clean techer of the week.
Yeah, this week's Clean Techer of the Week is David Arfin, CEO of 9Dot Energy, nominated by Andrea Lukey from Clean Tech Leaders Roundtable. David's a pioneer in the clean energy space and has been leading on community-based energy storage in New York City, recently raising $225 million, which is the threshold to be a Clean Techer of the Week. We don't do anything below $200 million here on this show. Congratulations to David.
Absolutely, David. Good job. Thanks, big thanks to Quo Robinson for coming on, for Brian Mendez, our fabulous producer, Claire the Factor Quirin, and Alex Style Guide Peterson for gathering up these stories. John, we'll see you in a week, my friend.
We'll see you next time.
Take care.
Hey, it's John Engel, and I'm excited to share that registration is now live for Grid Tech Connect Forum California. Join us in Newport Beach, June 24th through the 26th for the Interconnection event. We're bringing together utilities, developers, regulators, and advocates to take on one of the biggest challenges facing the energy transition, both at the DG and utility scale levels. Click the link in the episode description and use promo code PODCAST to save 10% on admission. Join our partners from the Department of Energy, NREL, Southern California Edison, PG&E, CAISO, Sunrun, NG, Convergent, AES, and so many more for this impactful event. We'll see you there.